honestly, dude, I probably would have given him half my business if he would have gave me 50 grand. And right. we joke because I'll hang out with him now and he'll go, every time I see one of your 70 trucks that are on the road, he's like, I'm an idiot. I could have like owned half that business.
Poor mindseted people, I call it an orphan mindset. You know, we have an orphan mindset and everything you do is based on short-term thinking and you just have lack of understanding. What we think the solution is a partner, it's money, it's these things, these external thing, not understanding that all the success is really internal, not external.
Pay yourself first. Pay yourself first. So many small business owners, they just take what's left at the end of the week. No, here I was, not paying myself, so we ran our savings account dry.
What would you say to a good-hearted small business owner? They need more profit, they need to level up. They got a lot more in the tank, but there's things going on between their ears that are holding them back. Maybe they don't even know it. You know, they think it's an external problem. We know it's an internal problem. Regarding mindset, personal development, what would you say to that person?
Get over the fact that you think nobody will ever do it better than you. 80% of something done by somebody else is 100% awesome.
Your competition is asleep. It's you against the world, and if you want to win, we need to get a few things straight. Your business is a mental war. Your success is a mental war. And making money is a game. And the game of money starts in your mind. This podcast exists to help you weaponize your brain through advanced marketing, mindset, and money concepts. To have what others don't, you need to know what others won't. Your future fortune awaits. Welcome to the War Plan Podcast.
Hey, my friend, welcome back to the War Plan Podcast. Hope you're doing great. Have all of your dreams come true yet? You still working on it? We're in Q2 as of the recording of this, and I have a special treat for you today. I'm joined by my friend Sam Gembel. Pause for dramatic effect. Unbelievable man of leadership, of overcoming adversity. He's got the heart of a teddy bear and a warrior at the same time somehow. Eight-figure business owner, business coach, speaks on stages. Just an inspiring person, a good person. He's a good dad, you know? Like, I respect people that have lots of money. Building wealth is admirable. But man, it's even cooler when they love their wife and kids and they do it the right way. And nobody's perfect, but I asked Sam to come on and share some stories about leadership, mindset. How do we do this? It feels hopeless sometimes. Sam, I got to steal you for like the next hour. How you doing, my friend?
It's, you know, I'll start by saying it is, we tried way too hard to make this episode happen. And then I remember when we were texting last time to schedule this, you sent me the link and I literally pulled over in a Big B Coffee parking lot and got this on the schedule. Cause I'm like, if I wait till I get home, I'm going to get distracted. And so anyway, it is an honor and a privilege to be on the other side of the screen with you. So yeah.
Oh man.
Chicken butt, well, man.
Tell us about your company, Atlas. It's a rather large company, eight-figure company, well-respected. I love your guys' website, branding, everything's so clean. You make it look easy. Maybe take us back. Tell us where you're at today and then take us back on where it started.
Yeah, it's so easy. Everybody can do it, right? Yeah. But no, it's a lot. Yeah, thank you for the intro there. So yeah, the name Atlas derived from the road that me and my wife lived on in Davison, Michigan. Born and raised in Flint, and what they say is true. If the lead from the bullets doesn't kill you, the lead from the water will. So, you know, that's sad, but true. What you hear is a true thing, but you know, me and my wife, were born in Flint. We met at Flint Central High School and, lived in her grandma's house, met her, moved in with her, you know, played house, not proud of that part of it, but thankfully, you know, we have a forgiving God, but, so we moved in together when I was 17, moved out of my parents' house, dropped out of high school because she is, you would never know looking at her, but she's 2 years older than me. So she, you know, graduated from Flint Central, went on to college. And when she graduated, I'm like, why am I just going to stay here and keep going to school? This is stupid. And so I dropped out and, you know, not something I'm proud of, but it happened. And we moved in with her, city of Flint, east side. And in 2005, So I had started, I worked for the Flint Journal back when there was a newspaper. I worked for the Journal for a couple years, kind of typed my way into the job. Like I didn't have the education that they wanted, but I could type because that was back when AOL was like, you know, the instant messenger and all that.
You got mail.
I could type, you know, quick. So I got a job at the Journal, and it was crazy because at 20 years old, I was already making more money than both of my parents combined. Like,
really? So
they're, you know, my dad called her a professional butt cleaner. She was a CNA for a nursing home.
Yeah.
She probably made, you know, at her peak before she passed away, she probably made $13 an hour. And which is sad because of the horrible hard job that these nurses have to do. And ironically, my dad was a jack of all trades, window cleaner, cut grass. Like he did just enough to provide. Like there was never, if he made enough by 2 p.m. to put food on the table that night, he was good for the day. Like I refer to him as a just enougher. And so, you know, when I remember, you know, the bill collectors calling, and I was a Kmart kid, and like we, you know, one pair of shoes a year. And I remembered like when the unavailable call would hit the caller ID, that my parents would be like, don't answer. And I just remembered, you know, it's been said that you become who you become, because of your parents, whether that's good or bad. And like my example was, I don't want to be like them. And so the second I could start making money, like I was gone. And so got that job from the Journal. One of my good friends worked for like a local lawn care company. So started cutting grass in 2001 and, you know, did pretty good. Like once I got the taste and the smell of mowing lawns professionally, like I remember cutting grass with my dad as a kid over on the Court Street area there in College Cultural for you Flintstones that know that area. And I remember when I got to do it professionally, like I fell in love with it, like just everything about it and the instant gratification, like seeing your results really, really quick. I loved it. And so with that, you know, we started doing pretty well for ourselves. I was making 40, 50 grand a year. My wife was going to college still, but she had a pretty good thing going at, I believe then she was at Sam's Club at the time. No, she's at King Par Golf in Flushing for you golfers.
I remember that. Yeah.
At King Par. And I remember one morning in 2005, living in the city of Flint, she almost got robbed in front of our house. And it was at that time that we're like, we probably need to move. We were making like 70 grand a year between the two of us. And we're like, we were hood rich as it gets. No bills, you know, and no car payments, no nothing. So we moved to Davison on the Atlas Road, and just living on a 2-acre lot, I started cutting grass up and down Atlas Road for neighbors. And that turned into buying a little trailer and cutting lawns a mile away, 2 miles away. And I didn't know it at the time that, you know, it was building that was the foundation of what would be Atlas Outdoor. And I still worked for the local smaller lawn care company, but I would just cut grass on the side and no kids, you know, nothing really going on there. And in 2010, my side hustle was becoming more than a side hustle. Like it was getting to the point to where now, I mean, it was trying to get out of work a little early because I couldn't get all my work done by dark. And I had actually hired a guy to go run the mowing during the day a little bit. And that was kind of a conflict of interest at the job I had, because I'm like cutting grass, working for a lawn care company, but building Atlas kind of, you know, out in the suburbs on the side. And in 2010, we had my wife graduated, you know, early on. She started working for the hospital as an HR manager. She had a good corporate job. And in 2010, we had our daughter in August, and, you know, she did her FMLA leave. I'm, you know, running, working during the day, doing landscaping at night. And in 2010, she did her 12 weeks leave for our daughter. And I remember her telling me, you know, she didn't want to go back to work. And so she just wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. And I'm thinking, like, how many more lawns do I need to pick up to, like, replace that salary, you know? And so I did. And just selling, hustling, and a friend of mine had like probably 25 or so recurring customers, and he lived kind of in our area. And he was wanting to move. This was back when like the legal pot thing was kind of getting big in Michigan. And he wanted to move over to the west side of the state to pursue his dreams of a potrepreneur, whatever you call those guys. And so he wants to move, and he goes, hey, you know, do you want to take over my customers? And I knew then with that, like, there's no way I could still work 40 hours at a day job and still cut those lawns. And through lots of prayer, super supportive wife, she's like, this is, you know, we're in 2011 now. And she's like, you need to go for it. You need to just quit your job and just go all in. And so, you know, went and got our LLC for Atlas Outdoor, and literally just named it Atlas because of the road we lived on, and never, ever thought it would be, you know, really an internationally recognized brand that it's become today. But, you know, God had way, way bigger plans for this thing than I did. I literally just wanted to cut grass and make enough to provide for us. But, you know, I talk a lot about being institutionalized. And if anybody who's seen the movie Shawshank Redemption will understand, you know, that scene where I take it you've seen the movie. But, you know, Brooks gets out of prison and, you know, he didn't know what it was like to be on the other side.
Yeah.
And, you know, I
got depressed, right?
Got depressed. He ended up killing himself. And so when we moved, I get goosebumps talking about this example, but, you know, coming from nothing, moving to Davison was our first glimpse of being uninstitutionalized, of, you know, living like we could live like kings with 60 grand a year in the city of Flint. But just moving to Davison, like, I remember our friends coming over with their loud stereos in their cars, and I'd be like, hey guys, can you guys kind of turn that down? Like my neighbors. And they're like, dude, you're like becoming one of these suburban dudes. Dude, I was from the hood, bro. Like I was pumped. Like I grew up on the north end, man. Like if you look at my driving record, I have like 2 pages of noise ordinance violation tickets. Like that's a real ticket. And so, but you know, we wanted to be different. We wanted it to change. And so when we, you know, started the company, I didn't know what it was like to make any real money. I didn't. I had no idea. And so there's so many things to unpack there. But, you know, that's the beginning. That's June of 2011. The company starts. We're 14 years in this year. And to, without getting too much of the story in the beginning of this podcast, fast forward to today, 2 locations. We opened a second location last year in Novi, Michigan. And we have got about 110 employees, ramps up to about 125 at our peak. And yeah, between the 2 locations, we'll, you know, just over 10 mil revenue, but we're climbing. Like that's, you know, we hit plateaus, we learned a lot, hit plateaus, went broke, hit plateaus, did more. And now, like, I really do feel like we're at that. There's a lot of momentum there, and things are kicking some butt and taking names right now. So.
Wow. So basically over the last, it sounds like 13 years or so, you went from zero to that, right? And have you ever seen that graphic on the internet that says what people think success looks like? And it's just a straight line. It's like what it actually looks like. And it's like a rat's nest of twists and turns and all. I'm sure there's a lot in there. I mean, it sounds like when you grew up with like a poverty mindset or a just enougher mindset, what was the catalyst for you to break out of that? Was it a person? Was it just the way you were hardwired? You just wanted to run out of there? Was it seeing a nice house? Was it a certain customer? Was there a moment you can remember, you know, you saw a car or some material thing where you're like, you know what? How do you even buy something like that? What even gave you a glimpse that it was possible to change your life financially?
Such a good question. And we could probably spend the whole episode talking about that, but there is a moment that stands out. I already mentioned the uninstitutionalizing ourselves from the city of Flint. So just changing the size of the pond, right? Taking the fish, this one pond where we were the big fish, you know, in that east side of Flint. I probably was making more money than our whole block combined because everybody was no jobs. It was very, very depressed. But there is a story, like I mentioned, being into like the cool car thing and all that. I loved vehicles. Like I had this Chevy Blazer that had like the wall of Subs in the back. I was that guy that shook the bejesus out of your house. And I was just you know, I was just young and dumb, right? But anyway, my neighbor, a couple houses down from me, he pulled in my driveway one day. I was out mowing the lawn, and he pulled in my driveway, and he was driving like a red Z71 off-road pickup truck, and he had a toolbox in the back. And he pulled in my driveway, and he goes, "Hey, my name's Justin, and I live a couple houses down. Would you be interested in, you know, I see you cut grass. Would you want to mow my lawn?" And I'm like, "Yeah, of course I'd love to, you know, $30. I didn't know what his lawn looks like. $30, I'll cut it for you." And from going down there, we became buddies, and just, you know, drinking a beer after I cut his lawn, we'd start talking. And one day I drove my Blazer to his house. Like, I drove in his driveway and like I got out and the door was open or something. And he says, "Hey, what's all that I don't know if we could swear on your podcast. What's all that SHIT in the back?" And it was all my subs and stuff. And like the people I always hung around was like, "Dude, that's sick, bruh." And this one guy goes, "What is all that stuff?" And I felt stupid. I remember the conviction, and I was like, I don't even know what that stuff is. I don't like it either.
And how'd they get in there? I don't even know.
Somebody must have put that. And I remember I felt so weird because this guy is clearly wealthy. He's got a great business, and he was an electrician, and he had this nice pickup truck with the toolbox. And I remember going back home and telling Brandy, I said, "Hey, I think I'm going to sell the Blazer." And she's like, "What? Why?" I said, "You know, we wanted to renovate our kitchen at the time," and said, "You know, we could get some good money out of it. I think we're just going to get rid of it." And she said, "Well, what are you going to buy? And I said, "I'm just going to get up like a pickup truck, something I can like pull the, you know, trailer to go cut some grass." And she's like, "That's weird." Ironically, those that know me then, that know me now, like, I have a problem with keeping stuff factory. Like, I have a Denali HD bat. It's lifted 37 stereo system. It's, you could take the custom stuff out, the dude, but you ain't taking it out of the unit.
You want to say you can take the kid out of the trailer park, can't take the trailer park out of the kid.
It's still in there, baby. It's still in there. Now I just like quality, but meeting him, and honestly, it's so funny because he was a big influence in saying, why don't you just start your own business? And he claims that he helped me name the company Atlas Outdoor. And I don't think he did, but he says he would. But he cracks up because I wanted him to give me money. I wanted him to invest. Like, when I was about a year into Atlas, we were broke, dude. We were growing, but like I needed money for growth. And I remember talking to him and I said, "Hey, would you be willing to help me buy another truck and trailer? I got customers like bugging us. You know, we had no credit to get, you know, a credit line." And I remember him telling me, he said, "Sammy, like, I love you, dude. You're like a little brother to me." He said, "But I never want money to like come between our friendship." And he said, "If you are so tapped out that like Brandy can't and Isabella can't eat, I will help you." But he goes, "I don't want to be part of the business." And honestly, dude, I probably would have given him half my business if he would have gave me 50 grand. And right, we joke because I'll hang out with him now and he'll go, every time I see one of your 70 trucks that are on the road, he's like, "I'm an idiot. I could have like owned half that business." And I was like, "Thank God I never, you know, went through with that." But, you know, he was such.
So it's easy to give away equity when it's not worth anything.
Amen.
I mean, that's just a good side quest lesson to throw out there. Because I think the other thing, too, if we can pause on that point for a second, is poor mindsetted people, or I call it an orphan mindset, you know. When you have an orphan mindset and everything you do is based on short-term thinking and you just have lack of understanding, what we think the solution is a partner, it's money, it's these things, this external thing, not understanding that all the success is really internal, not external. Not that money doesn't help, but you wouldn't have known what to do with it anyway. You would have spent it wrong anyway. You know, it would be lasted for 2 seconds and you give away half your company. It's an important lesson for people listening to this, I think. What do you think?
I hear it. I hear it on mentoring calls all the time because obviously I love to help people through the school of hard knocks. And I get asked that all the time about people saying, "Hey, I'm thinking about taking on a partner."
Right.
And I really do credit a little bit of our success to never giving any of it away. I mean, honestly, we don't know where it's going to stop. It's worked, humbly said, it's worked probably a pretty good amount of money now. And, you know, think about that. Like I said, had that guy became a partner or even if you're thinking about a strategic partner, this guy was just going to give me money, hopefully. But right. Think about bringing on the strategic partner. You see this all the time in failed partnerships where like the values don't align, or one person seems like they're outworking the other one and it ends up, you know, breaking apart. And so, man, like if their partnerships can be a great thing, if the values and what the I do for you, you do for me is aligned. We see this a lot in couplepreneurships and husband wife teams when like the wife, we'll just use for the sake of this story, where the wife is going to join the husband's business. And let's just say, because it's pretty rare the husband joins the wife business, but it happens. But we're for the sake of this story. But when the wife joins the husband's business and she's doing it to help him not fulfill her God-given purpose, mission, and vision. And, you know, there's always a, well, I'm doing this for you. It, right. And in the beginning, it might have been for them. Like, I'm honestly, Brandy came to Atlas because I needed help. But little did we know that, you know, she's bachelor's in business, HR manager, worked for the local hospital. She brought a lot of passion and purpose to this unorthodox landscape company, and it just worked. And so, as much as like, yeah, we're a couplepreneur, dude, like she does her thing and I do mine. Like she's not at Atlas to help Sammy out. She is here because she loves people. She loves recruiting. She loves, it's not uncommon for me to like, she's in an interview and I've opened the door to like grab my lunch out of her office and she's freaking praying over an applicant. I'm like, hey, I'm just trying to grab my turkey sandwich out of here. I will see my way out. You know, like, it's the same thing in partnerships where if there's a value proposition, yeah, like that situation there.
Oh yeah.
He wanted nothing to do with my business and it could have been bad.
Some people say the only ship that don't float is a partnership.
That is.
But, you know, I've had really good partnerships, but it's very risky. And it's similar to marriage in the sense that they're easy to get into and they're hard to get out of. You know, it's like gluing two pieces of paper together. It's really simple to do that, but you can't take them back apart without messing everything up. You can go to Vegas and have Elvis marry you, right? So you can get a partnership in a 5-minute conversation. The guy writes you the check. But another thing I like is that all money has personality. So if you get an investor or a partner, you're not just getting money from the investor. You're getting like their thoughts, opinions, good, bad, or ugly. You're getting a marriage. You're getting yourself yoked with them, which is like this old biblical reference of like the thing around your neck and it's around their neck. And I think it's awesome, man. God was protecting you. And let's talk about that for a second. So you mentioned your wife praying for applicants. We're Jesus people. I'm the least religious Christian you'll ever meet. I'm a kingdom guy. And, you know, all Jesus did was walk around, help people, and talk about the kingdom. Literally the whole time. The kingdom of God, the kingdom of God, the kingdom of God. And so in business, like I view our business literally as a ministry, externally and internally. What's that been like for you? Because you had like a whole faith journey too. And then Christians are really weird about money stuff and they have all this programming of like you're a bad person. Did you ever wrestle with any of that? I mean, when you started making real money, I don't know. Run with that for a second if you don't mind.
So people will say, you know, oh, you're a religious person or you're a Christian. And I say, no, actually I'm not. And they look at me weird and I say, honestly, I just love Jesus. Like that's where I'm at. I love Jesus. Call it whatever you want to put, but that's what I do. And, but anyway, yeah. Like, so obviously I grew up, but my mom took me to the Catholic church across the street from our house, but I didn't know anything about, you know, what that looked like or what that meant. And it's kind of crazy when we had our daughter in 2010, we're living in Davison, and my wife said, I think it'd be really important for us to, you know, raise her going to church. And I'm like, okay, that, you know, all right, maybe we find a church to go to. And mind you, only church I ever been to was like a Catholic, full-blown St. Michael's style, you know, prayer ritual kind of stuff, and never understood it. And so for Easter in 2011, we went to this little Free Methodist church in Davison, and not to, you know, too much about it, but I've been a drummer since I was a kid. So I was like, you know, playing in rock bands, toured all over the state. And so we go to this little Free Methodist church for Easter, and they had a drum set. And I'm like, I've never seen a drum set in a church before. And so we, you know, we go to this church for service, for Easter service, and we saw a couple people there that we knew. So I felt comfortable right away. Like, okay, there's people here we know. It's not, must not be too weird. And we got our daughter there and so went to service, and it was a good service. I'm like thinking about what we're going to eat afterwards and get out of there. And my wife's like, hey, I really like that service. We should come back again. And sure, what the heck, we'll come back again. So we go back again, and we saw a couple more people that we knew. And, you know, fast forward to a couple months of consistently going to service, I'll never forget the worship pastor in the fellowship area one day. We make eye contact, and he says to me, he says, hey, I heard you're a drummer. And I'm like, what? I think worship pastors just like have a way of knowing that there's a musician in the congregation. Maybe the way I tap my head during the worship or something, but he knew I was a drummer. I was like, actually I am. And he goes, would you ever like want to like play like here at church? And like, no, hey bro, I'm a rock star drummer. Like, I'm not going to do this. No. You got the wrong guy. And he did that with conviction. And he goes, okay, right in the eyes. And I was like, what, dude? He like looked right into my soul that day. And I'm like, it didn't sit right with me. I'm like, what was that look for? He was coming for me, dude. He was coming for me. He knew I was a mess. And like, you know, when I say a mess, like I was the guy 4 a.m., you know, getting home from the bar, from a gig, taking a whiz in the driveway. Thankful I didn't get pulled over, or even worse, kill somebody. And nothing to say, and I'm but I was pretty messed up. Like, at least in that, I didn't think I was doing anything wrong, but I wasn't living a very good life. And it got to the point to where, like, we were going to church every Sunday, but I'd play a gig on Saturday night, and like, I knew what I was doing. I started to get that conviction, like, it wasn't right. And a couple months later, our God is greater. No, I'm so like, you know, so I end up somewhere in there, like, a friend of mine is on the worship team, and I end up becoming the worship drummer there. And we would play gigs on Saturday night at like a rock fest, and there's, you know, all kinds of promiscuous stuff going on. And then I'm going to church on Sunday as the worship drummer. So I was not the same guy on Saturday night as Sunday morning. And so I'll never forget, you know, drumming there. All one day during the message the pastor gave, it was like about that. It was about being the same guy, being a leader in your household, being a dad, and all this. And I'm not joking, Josh. I thought my wife sent the pastor an email and said, talk about this at church. I was so convicted. And so, dude, I'm like, I didn't even want to come back. I'm like, this church, this place is messed up. And we'll go back to the next week. And it happened again. And I'm like, oh crap, you know, I knew there was something wrong there. But one night I'm playing a gig, I'm playing a show, and big rock show. And
what was your band? Because I was in a band. We used to play at the Machine Shop all the time.
Oh, I played at the Machine Shop multiple times.
I wonder if we were around each other and didn't even know it. Cause, you know, a service company was in Fenton years ago, but, yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. I'm playing a gig one night. We were at Dryden Days in good old Dryden, Michigan. And there was a guy sitting in the front part of the stage, like looking up. And I remember we made eye contact, and something about this guy, dude, I felt like he was Jesus. And he's looking at me, and he's like, Jesus going, I'm giving you this life. And, you know, our business was kind of starting to take off, and we're making some traction. And he's like, I'm giving you these God-given talents, and this is what you're doing with it. And I went back to our band practice like the next week. And I remember telling the guys, I said, hey, I can't do this anymore. Like, I can't. And everybody in the band, they all felt the same way. They all, like, somebody just needed to say it. They all felt convicted. And so we end up, I mean, like, without going down to too much in the story, we ended up forming like a Christian rock,
like this, a Christian rock band. And that band, we would go play at like men's festivals, and we were all like, you know, skillet covers and stuff. And it was amazing because I still got to drum, but like, we still had fun with it. And I'm still a worship drummer today for Grumlaw Church. Shout out to Grumlaw, Heartland, Michigan, another campus in Grand Lake, Michigan. And I'm the worship drummer there and I love it. But as far as in our business, you know, it, God continued to reveal himself over and over and over again through adversity after adversity after, you know, bank account, no money in it. We got to make payroll. And then we get just enough to be able to make payroll. And when we went, we were about 9 months into our business journey when we ran out of money. Like, we start the business, we had about $22,000 in the bank. And, you know, my wife's staying at home now and cut the cable. We got rid of every frill you can think of. And we're about 8 to 9 months in. And I remember coming home one day and my wife never wanted to put the burden on me of business, you know, hey, we don't have any money, all that. And I got home one day and she goes, hey, I know you're working hard. I know you're out there. You're coming home. You stink. And, but she's like, we don't have any money. And I'm like, okay, what does that mean? Like, what do you mean no money? She's like, well, like our personal savings account, we don't have any money. And so we're looking at it and we're trying to like figure out what we're going to do. And our mortgage at the time was like $1,300 bucks a month, something like that. And I said, well, I wonder if, what if we went to the bank and asked them to like furlough our mortgage for a couple months, you know, like that could let us get back on our feet and build this business into something. And she's like, okay, let's do it. So we go to Chase Bank, and like, mind you, we had grade A credit, like 800, 900 credit score, never had a late payment in our life. And we go to Chase Bank, and you know, this is, remind you, we're in late 2011. We're probably more like spring 2012. And because, yeah, we're actually in the winter, because remember, it was cold. So we're not far into the business. And mind you, we're just coming out of the housing crash. So we're 2011. So banks are very, very skeptical on loans and money. And we go to Chase, and the guy says, hey, well, in order for us to help you, all you have to do is miss a couple of house payments. And what we'll do is we'll put you into like this kind of like a charity case kind of thing. And then, you know, we don't want to foreclose your home, but we got to see that it's real. I'm like, well, you can look at my bank account and there's no money in it. That's all you need to see. And he's like, I know, but you got to miss a couple payments. Okay. Got it. So we leave the bank, got our daughter in her car seat. And my wife's like, so what do you think? We're doing it. No payment. We're going to miss it. This is going to help us. This business is going to make it. If we got to move to an apartment, we're going to make it work. And so my office at the time was over, was a Starbucks in Burton, Michigan. And there was a lady there. Her name was Jenna. Jenna plays a big part in my faith journey here. Jenna was a barista. Her and her husband used to be custom home builders. And during the housing market crash, they lost everything. And so she saw Atlas starting, you know, I'm always in there. I got my laptop. I'm always on the phone. I'm always hustling. And like I got to know her because I would literally go out, estimate, go mow some lawns, meet some customers, go back to Starbucks, send a quote. I'd interview people at Starbucks. Everything happened at Starbucks. That was my office. And so I got to know Jenna really well. And she, I go in there one day after this all goes down and I'm telling her, she's always like, how's business going? I see you out there and, you know, you're always on the phone. And I said, yeah, I said, actually, really well. I said, actually, we're not paying our mortgage anymore. And she's like, what? Wow. Like, what does that mean? I'm like, well, I talked to the bank and they're going to furlough like a couple years of payments for us to help us get this business off the ground. And she's like, that's wild. Like, you're doing it. I was like, oh yeah, we're doing it. This business is going to be something when we grow up. And so she's cool. Here's your coffee. And I go sit down and she comes over and sits at my table hour later. And she says, hey, like, I ain't trying to get in your business. Like, and I'm like, no, what's up, Jenna? We're cool. You know, she said, don't not pay your mortgage. And I was like, what, no, man, like, we got a plan. Like, we're all in. You're messing up the program right now, Jenna. How about you go back, make more coffee, and let me do the business? And she's like, I'm just telling you, Sam, the bank is going to own you. And she said, if you don't pay your mortgage, what if you ever need credit for your business? And I'm like, Dave Ramsey, cash only. We ain't buying nothing on credit in this business. And she's like, I'm just saying you could. And I'm like, nope, Dave Ramsey, no credit, no nothing. But hey, I appreciate it. Somebody needs a latte. Have a good day. And I get home from work and I'm like, Brandy, and I'm just like, I got the win because we had this plan, right? That's going to work. This is what we're going to do. We had convinced ourselves that that's what we needed to do to make something with this business. And I get home and Brandy's like, what's up? You just don't seem like yourself. And I said, hey, I'm talking to Jenna today and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, that first off, who's Jenna? I was like, oh, the barista at Starbucks. And I was like, she's saying, you know, we should not pay our mortgage because it could, what if we needed credit one day? She's like, well, I thought we agreed. No credit. I was like, I agree. You're right. So she's like, but what if she is right? And I'm like, I don't know. And Brandy says, you know, I never did have peace about not paying the mortgage. And so I'm like, well, how much do we need? So we did our little napkin budget. And she's like, man, if we made 52 grand a year, we could live, we could survive on 52 grand a year. And so I'm like, how do we make 52 grand a year? Like every dollar this company makes, we're paying it back out. Every, you know, materials, labor, and we had a couple of trucks, and like, I don't know how we're going to do that, but we're going to figure it out. We're going to pay our mortgage now. So we made that decision, and I get a call from somebody that knew somebody that said, hey, Best Buy is looking for somebody to do like outdoor garbage pickup two nights a week. They want it done at night. And I had called the business Atlas Outdoor because we didn't want to just limit ourselves to cutting grass. We'll do anything outdoor. We'll pressure wash, whatever you want. We'll wash your windows, you name it, we'll do it. And so when I heard this, I'm like, I could kind of fit the model. It's got to fit the model. We pick up some garbage. And so, you know, I call this person up and, you know, what are you looking for? And they're like, well, we need garbage picked up at these 11 Best Buys from Fort Gratiot, Michigan, pretty much over to Okemos and everything south of that. And, you know, so I'm looking at it. I put it in the Google Maps and or whatever, MapQuest, whatever we used then. And it said that I could make the whole run in about 3 hours. So I was like, okay, 3 hours. If I spend 20 minutes at each one, I could be, if I left at 1 a.m, I could be back in time to start the day. Okay, I'll do it. And they're like, well, what would you charge? And I went, $4,200 a month. That would cover gas and pay my mortgage, pay my bills. This happened right after we agreed to, we're going to pay our mortgage. And so I land this deal with Best Buy, and two nights a week, I'd be out. Brandy would come with me sometimes, daughter in the car seat. We'd pick up cigarette butts, diapers, empty the trash, pick gum off the sidewalk, you name it. And dude, we did that for probably about a year and a half, just to kind of get things going and, you know, to not jump too far ahead. You know, that turned into like a 30 grand a month relationship, cutting all the grass, plowing all the snow. And it turned into a huge, unbelievable relationship. And, you know, dude, but like, I paid myself 52 grand a year for probably 3 to 4 years. Like, I just was so thankful to just have that little bit of money that we, like, that was good. It was good enough. It was good enough. And, you know, we ended up losing the contract. That all went away. But, you know, to bring it back to how God played a role in the journey, Jenna, dude, our business today, we had millions of dollars in credit lines. Millions. Like, I mean, literally, we took delivery as we're recording this. We took delivery of 4 trucks today, $230,000 for these 4 new trucks. I didn't pay cash for those. Had we not paid our mortgage, had Jenna not told me to not do that, to go back to spring of 2012, we landed a condominium complex in Fenton, not far from where good old Birds Beware, right around the corner from Birds Beware. Nice little complex called Whisperwood, right around the corner.
Yeah.
You probably wash the windows in Whisperwood. We land that contract way out of our league, dude. Way out of our league. It's hilly. You need all these special walk behind mowers to do it. I sold the contract. We had no money to buy the stuff to do it, but I convinced that customer that we were the poop that we needed toilet paper. We can handle your account. And so I remember going into the credit union and trying to get a business loan to buy a couple mowers, and they wouldn't even look at me. The guy's name was Elmond. Elmond, if you ever listen to this podcast, Elmond, after about six times of like begging, sending an email, begging, Elmond calls me and he says, Sam, we pulled your personal credit. I know you have no business credit. We pulled your personal credit and you have like an 8-something credit score. He said, I talked to our underwriters and we're going to take a chance with you. Get goosebumps again. Had we not paid the mortgage, had Jenna not said, Sam, don't, not pay your mortgage, we never would have got that first loan. We would not be where we're at today if it wasn't for that. So when I talk about faith in my business, all these dots, dude, like looking forward, sometimes faith in our business doesn't make sense. But when you're living the life where you're at and you connect the dots backwards, you're like, wow, had that not happened? Wow, had that not happened? And we do some business with a couple higher ups from Starbucks now. And some of them know Miss Jenna. And I'll always tell them like, hey, do you ever see Jenna anymore? And they're like, yeah, I run into her every now and then. I said, well, if you ever do, just tell her Sam said, thank you. And they're like, for what? And I said, she'll know what she did. And she, I mean, who knows if she even remembers the name Atlas Outdoor, who knows? But when you talk about, honoring God and connecting all those dots, and fast forward to today, as we talked about, I mean, like our business is ran. I'm actually doing a talk in October about how to honor God in your business without offending your employees and your customers. To get to tell that story on a national stage, I'm actually a little nervous. I will be brutally honest. I've talked to thousands of people. I'm a little scared for that one, but I'm like, God will give me the words to speak. But yeah, I mean, like, to see how everything unfolded, how all those times, 14 years, I've never had to tell my employees to hold their paychecks. We've gotten really close, very, very close. But the more we leaned in, the more, I mean, I could tell stories about how I used to take cash. That was my owner's perk. And we used to have cash flow problems all the time. Quit taking cash because a mentor of mine said, Sam, it's not your money. It's God's money. And you're stealing when you take, it's your business, but that's not your money. It's God's money. And I was so like, as a whole story, we could talk about just that. But ironically, our cash flow issues started to not be as bad. And not saying I was taking hundreds of thousands of dollars, but God's like, if I can trust you, if you're not going to be faithful with the little, I'm about to give you this abundance that you're seeking. And the more and more we've been faithful, the more and more we give, the more and more we get. And so there you go.
Oh yeah. Generosity is, that's a whole conversation too, reaping and sowing, the fact that the economy is like a garden, I don't know. There's a lot of directions we could take. I think what would be really cool maybe to get ready to land the plane would be to, let's do some either leadership, system, marketing, tactical, lightning round style tips, hacks, insights for the person listening to this that, they want to have an 8-figure business. They want to have, and by the way, revenue is one thing, but it's also about lifestyle, and you have the leadership structure and team in place in your business where you have a lot of freedom and flexibility. You have a lot of elasticity with your time. They want that. So maybe we can shift into that. And so because you've coached people, you've been doing this a long time, maybe let's rapid fire a couple things out of your brain. What are some of the biggest mistakes you see people make that keep them stuck? What comes to mind? It could be anything from finance to mindset to leadership, wherever you want to take it. But let's try to get 3 to 5 of those knocked down.
Because you mentioned finance, I'll start with that right out of the gate. Save your cash. I remember what it was like to be at $5 million in revenue and barely making payroll. And so to now humbly said to be at a place where we don't, you know, things get tight, but not like it used to be. And so I would start with that right there. If you're thinking about buying that $10, $15, $20, $30,000 van or truck, and you're like, well, I got the cash, I'm just going to buy it. Finance it, dude. That 6 or 7 or 8% interest rate, but having money in the bank, I sleep better at night with that. Probably because I remember what it was like to not have it. So since you mentioned finance, from a leadership principle, it's a question I get asked a lot, and whether it's a lightning round or from a stage, and somebody says, what's the one, if you could just give one nugget, Mr. Sam. And like, I remember for years, dude, it was, you know your customer avatar, know the kind of customer you want to service, know the area that you want to work in. Like, that's like that. I would give those for the answers. And I remember just feeling convicted. Like, that's like low hanging fruit answers. Like, you should know that. You should have read something that's like, that gives you that. So I'm gonna tell you what mine is. Made the mistake. I made it a few times actually. And it's, as your business is growing and, you know, you've got all these systems that are by default, not by intent. They're just the way things were created because at the time it worked. And what happens is when you're in, you're burning a candle at 4 or 6 ends, you look for the best thing at the time to help you just relieve some pressure. And what we end up doing is we promote people into quote unquote managerial roles because they were good at the work, because they were a good technician, because they were good at cutting grass, because they were good at putting brick in the ground, because they were good at running a pressure washer. We say, this guy's got operations manager written all over him. And they might have not even ever wanted that. So leadership principle number one, do not put people into positions just because they're good at the work. And we've all done it. We've all made that mistake. That's number one. You know what the second one is? Keeping them there, thinking that over time, they'll get better. Mm-hmm. Over time, by just because they suck, well, they'll grow into it. They won't. They won't. And if you're listening to this and in your mind, you're, because we always want to have a promote from within culture. I actually do not have a success story I can share. Myron Golden's probably got hundreds. I do not have a success story I can share in a small service business, call it 10 million and under. I do not have a success story where I can share of somebody bringing in an ops manager or a general manager, and that new employee took their business to the next level. I don't have one. Maybe somebody else has got one. You got to homegrow them. But the problem is we're too quick to toss them the keys to the leadership van and say, run with it. So if you're listening to this and you're like, my next right thing, which I always want from every episode I record, I always want people to think, like, to know what their next right thing is to do in their business. And this is a popular one. There's people in their business with 6, 5, 6, 7, 8 technicians, and they're doing everything themselves. And they're like, I need to get an ops manager in place. For one, you got to homegrow them. Two, if you can't think of that person's name within 8 to 10 seconds from right now, they don't work for you. They don't work for you. If that person's not already on your staff and you're like, man, there's something different about John. There's something different about Stephanie. There's something different about Josh. If that person's name doesn't come to your mind, he doesn't work for you. If you have to dig deep and go, yeah, he could be an ops manager. It's not the guy yet. So if you know that you want to move somebody into that, you know, I know you've got kids that can drive now. When they were learning to drive, you didn't just toss them the keys to the Corvette. Like, you took time to make sure they knew how to drive before you give them the keys. But how often in business do we give somebody, you know, the keys to a van or a truck or to the leadership family van and say, do with it what makes sense to you. So from a leadership perspective, that would be like my biggest nugget. Don't do it. Don't do it.
So good. So I did the same thing. The best technician will often make the worst manager, because those are totally different skill sets. They're completely unrelated things. But we all do it. So that's good advice. I got kind of three questions to wind it down with, but just for fun, I haven't done it like this before. I'm going to ask you three pointed, put you on the spot questions, and then you give me your best answer in like less than 60 seconds for each one. So it's a rapid fire thing. And here's what I'm thinking. I'll tell you what all three of them are first, so you can prime the pump. First one is like, what's the single greatest piece of advice you'd have for a small business owner that wants to be a great father? That's the first one. Second one is, what's the single greatest piece of advice you have for a small business owner who wants to get way better at sales? That's the second one. The third one is, what's the single greatest piece of advice you'd have for a small business owner when it comes to mindset or personal development? So I'll go back to the beginning with the father one. But Sam, eight-figure entrepreneur Sam Gemble, what's the single greatest thing a small business owner can do if they want to be a great father?
To be a great father as a small business owner, it starts with having a supportive mother, a supportive spouse. If she is not for you wanting to be that supportive father and not encouraging you to do that, you know, we do what we do. We're cavemen deep down inside. And so we do what we do for our wives, for the mother of our children. So if you want to, if you don't have that support system at home, you can do it, but it's going to be really, 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 really hard. I don't have a success story with that one either. So with that said, you know, that for me, we worked 8 days a week. And when my wife sent me a video of our daughter taking her first steps, I knew that that's not why I went into business. And we adopted the 4-day work week. So that would be my advice for it. You work a 4-day work week, because that way, when it's busy, when it's spring, when you get rain days, you can't work, you've got Friday to make up for it. Think Chick-fil-A, 6 days a week, they outsell the highest revenue generating McDonald's by almost double.
Amen to that. Yeah. Reminds me.
4-day work week.
Is it Parkinson's law? It's like all tasks expand to the time allotted them. So you'll do the same revenue in less time if you put that constraint in place. That's really good. Okay, second question is, Sam Gemble, Mr. Eight-Figure Genius, Billionaire Philanthropist, Eight-Figure Entrepreneur Guy. What should a small business owner do, or what would you say to them, to the small business owner who wants to get way better at selling?
They want to get better at selling. And that's probably one of the hardest things to train people on. But learn to connect with people. You got to get out from behind that desk. And if so, I mentioned earlier about my Starbucks story. I think I got better at sales just being out in the environment and people talking to me and hearing me on the phone. And I do think there's a lot of God-gifted talent to be in the sales world. But anything you can do to build confidence in your product. And sad truth, what happens in our small businesses is we get so beat down by the day-to-day, by the employee not showing up, by the callbacks that you get for something happening, that insecurity shows in our sales. And I call it a doom loop, because now when you go to a sale and you're at this really, really picky chance to be the customer of a lifetime, and in your mind, you're thinking, if I'm not the one that's going to come here and do this, then we're going to screw it up. So we almost find ourselves talking ourselves out of the sale with the customer. So you got to believe in your product, dude. You got to sell. My boy Josh Latimer says you should show up and sell like you got $1 million in the bank. That confidence.
Right.
And so when people, a lot of times the reason they can't sell is because customers can sniff out that insecurity. I love to fish. I'm not obsessed with fishing, but I love to fish. And I learned this in fishing, that if you throw your live bait in the water and a fish bites the bait, tastes the hook, and spits the bait back out, even though that bait's still alive, you recast it, right? Other fish know that bait has been tasted and spit back out. So it's actually, you get rid of the bait, put a new one on, because the other fish are going to know that there's something fishy about that bait. Customers are the same way. If they sense sales, desperation, they will. So you should sell with confidence like you got $1 million in the bank. And I'm telling you, when I was trying to cultivate a sales team, this is off my 1 minute, so this is more of a story. When I was trying to grow a sales team, I had this ability to go meet with customers and they would give me a $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 deposit check.
because I was so passionate about what I was selling, but I needed that money to make payroll, and wasn't the right way to run my business, but I could sell. And, you know, I tried training my salespeople to redo that, and they can't. Like, they can sell. They sell millions of dollars worth of work, but their style of selling is completely different than mine. And so, you know, mine was always just that ability to be like, we're selling you time. And I remember a customer bought a swimming pool space from me. And when she wrote the deposit check, she said, I think you're more excited about this pool than I am. How do I not let you install this thing?
And,
That passion will sell. Yeah. That passion.
Well, Hormozy always says, you know, conviction is the cheat code for sales. It's not saying the right sentence to overcome their spouse objection. All that stuff is nonsense. It's like certainty and conviction, enthusiasm and magnetism. It covers a multitude of sin in sales. And I agree. That's why it's so hard, because when you're small, especially, you know how flawed you are, that something could happen, you know, or if the ball gets dropped. And so you kind of, you're the customer service and the sales department at the same time. And that's a problem. Large companies, they keep those people away from each other, right? You don't want your sales team to ever hear a negative story of anything ever, right? Because their conviction goes down. So, okay, that's awesome. Let's end on this note then. I'm going to ask you one more of these questions, and it's a big one. You can take more than a minute if you want to. I just did that for added drama, but what would you say to a good-hearted small business owner? They need more profit. They need to level up. They got a lot more in the tank, but there's things going on between their ears that are holding them back. Maybe they don't even know it. You know, they think it's an external problem. We know it's an internal problem. Regarding mindset, personal development, what would you say to that person?
Get over the fact that you think nobody will ever do it better than you. 80% of something done by somebody else is 100% awesome. And I'll never forget when I got off the lawnmower, when I was, that's always the dream, to get off the truck. And I'll never forget, I had got done mowing this lawn, and it was one of my best works. Stripes were checkerboarded out, like, lawn dude's got nothing on me, bro. I laid down this lawn and it was beautiful. And the homeowner came out, and I thought she was going to give me a compliment. And she came out to say something along the lines of like, hey, how come when you mow it, the grass looks like it's like folded over? And it was on that day that I said, I care more about those stripes than the homeowners do. They just want the grass cut. They just want it to look good. And it almost kind of took away like that passion to do like those extra little, here I am going the extra mile, right? And, but I learned that, you know, I remember when I got off the lawnmower, actually I have a great story with, even today, probably one of our best commercial clients. And in the beginning days, this person, they only wanted me to do their work. They would only allow Sam at their home. We did their business. I won't mention the business, but we did their business and we did their homes. Cut the grass twice a week, like very, very particular customer. And they only wanted me to do the work. And as time went on and I had this mindset, like only I can go there, only I can go there, only I can go there. And I had hired, starting to hire people, we're starting to grow. And one week I sent one of my crews to go do the work. Cause I'm like, hey, I was busy. It wasn't by like, I was trying to be lazy. I just legit couldn't go, and we're cutting the grass twice a week. So you got to hit these 2 days. And he didn't say anything, and did it again. And then, you know, eventually someday something got said, he got home and he goes, hey, your guy, Chris, was out here today. Is everything okay? And I was like, oh, it's fine, man. We're just growing. And he's great. Well, he's like, he did a pretty good job. And he's like, maybe if you could have him do this. And I'm like, man, I don't have to be the guy. And so what I learned was like, people will screw stuff up, but as long as it's close to where you would want it to be at, you can focus that time to work on the business, not in the business. Here's the irony of the same customer. If I were to go out there to do the work now, he would think something was wrong. Now he doesn't want me at his house. Like, he wants my crew because they have a great rapport. He says jump, they say how high. I'm like, man, let me get back to you. I got like 10 texts to return from customer today where I'm like, I got this podcast I'm shooting. I suck at that customer thing. Now I have customers that'll tell me today, like, I remember you used to stop by and drop lunch off, and they're like, you never do that anymore. I'm like, yeah, that's my bad. I need to get better at that. But you know, get over that mindset that, you know, you've got to be the only one to do the work. Like 80% of something by somebody else is 100% awesome. And the second thing I'll add on to that is, don't do things because it's just the way you've always done it. Because you got to remember, man, there's technology. There's somebody out there that can do the work better than you. And you have to get over that. So if you're that guy on the truck, there's a million things with that. Pay yourself first. Pay yourself first. So many small business owners, they just take what's left at the end of the week. No, if you need to make $1,000 a week, when I told that story about the Best Buy, I should have put myself on payroll, then figured out a way to make it work. But instead, here I was, not paying myself till we ran our savings account dry. Pay yourself what you need to make to pay your bills. Pay yourself what you would make for whatever that role is that you own in the business. If you're the sales guy and you're doing 500 grand in revenue, good salesperson makes 8 to 12% of sales. That's 50 grand a year you should at least pay yourself. Quit thinking, because the problem with not paying yourself first is when it does come time to pay yourself or to hire somebody to take over said role, you don't know what you can afford to pay because you've never given yourself the money you need to make, right? So hope that makes sense. We'll do that for the next episode. That'll be our whole episode.
No, man, I appreciate your time, sharing your story, all the gold. I can feel your passion, your heart. I know how much you care about regular, good-hearted people, man. And that's why I think we vibe so well. And it's been a while since we've connected, but it's like we picked right off where we were last time. So how could people connect with you? You have your own podcast. There's a Facebook group. It has really cool stuff in it. I don't know where you want to send people. Sign us off, Sam.
It feels weird to say, but you can just go to samgimbel.com and branch off to everything from that. The Culture Proof podcast is really, really just gaining some traction. There's thousands of subscribers already, and we're only 8 episodes in. So like, there's a lot of cool stuff going on with that. There's the Culture Proof Facebook group. That's what, Josh, what you're talking about. A lot of good leadership stuff in there. There's a daily lesson, all stuff that's just applicable to what, you know, we're all dealing with. And, you know, and it comes from a place of experience. It's been a long time since I heard of something that's went on or happened that we haven't made the mistake on it, you know, at least once. And so to be able to give that back and help people hopefully skip a few steps in their journey it's truly a God-gifted honor of mine to be able to do so.
So awesome. Sam Gimbel, everybody. It's G-E-M-B-E-L, samgimbel.com. Sam, take care. God bless, my friend.
Same to you, brother. Take care, my man.
Do you want to weaponize your brain and turn it into a money-making machine? Consider joining Warplan Coaching. You'll get thousands of dollars in exclusive courses and training, a private community, a chance to come to in-person meetups at Warplan Studios, and access to myself for Q&A every single month. Want to know the best part? It's free. Plus, we'll send you a private weekly newsletter full of money-making tips and cutting-edge ideas. Just go to warplan.com to sign up. Hey, I'm your biggest fan. I'm rooting for you. See you next time.